It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Jesus said there are two roads. There's the broad road that leads to destruction and judgment, and there's the other road that leads to heaven.
Fitting for a man who touched hundreds of millions with his message of hope and faith.
And follow Jesus. Let him lead you home.
The outpouring of condolences for the passing of evangelist Billy Graham has been just as heartfelt.
Even as we remember Reverend Graham this morning and keep his family in our hearts, we continue this renewed work.
Graham preached to more people than anyone in world history.
Christianity is not a white man's religion, and don't let anybody ever tell you that it's white or black. Christ belongs to all people.
A man of God, humbled by the fellowship that shaped and embraced him, called by some the Protestant Pope. The world was his pulpit.
I never dreamed there would ever be a night like this in my life.
The Reverend Billy Graham said he first felt the Spirit at age 16 after hearing an evangelist preach. Soon after, leaving his family's dairy farm for Bible college in Florida, where he started preaching on the streets of Tampa.
They have a place there where this saloon keeper threw me out into a ditch and told me never to come back.
Graham received a warmer reception from Ruth Bell. The two married in 1943, and as their family grew, so did his ministry.
There are problems of sin and habit that cannot be solved outside the person of our Lord Jesus Christ.
A 1949 California tent revival drew national attention.
Israel did not obey the voice of God. Israel wandered further and further from God.
Around the world, crowds began filling stadiums, coming to hear a spirited new message about Jesus Christ and his heavenly Father.
I want to tell you about God.
Graham became a confidant of presidents and offered spiritual guidance at 7 inaugurations.
Shall we pray?
Although he was asked many times to run for office, Graham said he was never tempted. He just wanted to preach, which he did into his 80s.
I have no plans to retire. The Lord may have plans.
But Parkinson's disease slowed him down.
I think God has sent it to me at this age to show me that I'm totally dependent on him.
His ministry has been passed on to his daughter Anne and son Franklin. What started in a tent so many decades ago has turned into the largest ministry in world history, a multimedia innovator into the digital age. Billy Graham's legacy lives on with a simple, enduring message.
But if you remember nothing that I say tonight, except one thing I want you to remember, God loves you.
All right, that was Fox News last night. Isn't that something to hear that on Fox News? That kind, you know, I think it's pretty remarkable that at this time in our history, when we're fighting so much for religious freedom on so many fronts, that we should still be able to openly express that. The death of Billy Graham is a big deal. It's a big deal to me, too. I wish I had more time, and perhaps at some time I will expand with you why. I remember interviewing Dr. Graham in the locker room at the stadium of the University of Illinois a number of years ago and being so nervous. But I grew up listening to Dr. Graham preach, and the thing that I learned from him, besides just the power of God unleashed in a man and the truth of the word being preached, but he always talked about current events. He wove in what was happening in the world with his preaching, and I think that that really marked me, and I think prepared me for what God called me to do later. But here I am at CPAC. At CPAC 2018, I'm not sure how many I've been to, but a lot.
And let's not count.
So sitting in front of me is someone who is now a seasoned veteran. He is and this is the country and sometimes all over the world.
That's right.
And including this year, converge on this place. We're at National Harbor, Maryland. And it's just a great event. I look forward to it every year, Matt. And you have done such a great job in your leadership. You've just made it grow and grow in all the right ways. So thank you, Sandy. Sweet to say that. I have to always say I met you when you and I were both a little younger, and you were working with George W. Bush.
Oh,
I'll
yeah.
never forget seeing your smiling face.
Those were great years, you know.
Those were great years.
What a great honor it is to work for a president. No matter whatever your political philosophy is, if you're right in the center of the storm working in a White House, those are heady days. And I think it's really special for us because now, you know, my wife is working for President Trump.
I know that. And by the way, your wife, that beautiful Mercedes Schlapp that people
wonderful.
See.
Yeah.
We don't see her as much on television now that she's working at the White House.
She kind of intentionally took herself off television because the job she decided to take for the president is one of, it's called strategic communication. So it's trying to get ahead of their big policy agenda items and trying to figure out how to talk about them, how to roll them out, how to coordinate with mm-hmm. the Hill, how to coordinate with cabinet secretaries. And you know, Sandy, because you do so much media and done it through the years, that it's a full-time job just to get ready for interviews and everything else. So she's really focusing on this work. But the president actually has told her, hey, I love what you're doing, but I need you on the television too. So she can't say
that. Did he
no.
say that? That's really funny. Matt, it's interesting to me that you were one of the first conservative leaders, because there's that conservative now means a lot of things.
Sure.
But in that broad spectrum, you were one of the first who really spoke out in favor of the president.
Yeah.
You defended him. I remember that because when he became the nominee, I did too, the very next
right.
morning. Ted Cruz was the person that I really supported.
Probably for most people here, it was the same thing.
But the morning after, it just seemed very clear to me. And I thought it was interesting that you kind of came out of the barrel the same way.
Yeah, no, that's right. Those were, that was, the, it's, I actually think it's been a rough 2 years for people. It was very emotional. We had this family squabble, this food fight in the conservative movement. The one thing I did not like about it is the whole Never Trump movement was started at CPAC to try to pressure me and the board to disinvite Donald Trump. I don't like the idea that people want to silence people. You know, let's hear people out. I think the movement can grow if people feel respect. And what I find with people, sometimes they start associating with conservatives because of it's a couple of issues. Over time, we get them on almost every issue. But it starts with a couple of issues that they get tuned into. And so I'm all about growing this movement. You know, some people come to CPAC and they won't even take the term conservative. They're not there yet. But the more they hear and talk to people like you, we're going to get them.
Yeah, no, I totally am with you on that. I just think I've watched people who shall not be named come from other broadcasting worlds to even Fox, and I've watched them change and morph because I know that there are a lot of things they just never heard before.
That's right.
Never occurred
totally
to them.
Right.
They did not know. They came from another, they were sealed away in some other land, and that's what's happening.
You know, Norma McCorvey, remember, she's the Jane Roe in Roe v. Wade. She became a Christian. She's not with us any longer. And she became pro-life. And when she first became pro-life, she wanted to eliminate abortion in the third trimester, these terrible late-term abortions. And some people are like, well, is that really pro-life? And people are on a journey. And right. once you acknowledge that that unborn child is indeed a child of God, even in its later terms, it's difficult, it's impossible logically and medically to not understand it's a child that whole time. So people, this happens in politics too, they take a step towards you. When someone takes a step towards me, I'm going to embrace them. And I'm going to give them a bear hug and pull them all the way in.
But it doesn't have to be manipulative because we stand on truth.
That's right.
And the conservative viewpoints are just basically the truth.
That's right.
You know, when I hear this argument, I'm going off on a tangent here, but these arguments about guns or no guns, it's presented as though there are two sides of equal value and never shall they meet. But I think the tiebreaker is what are the facts, not how people feel about guns or whether they hate guns or they love guns and therefore we can't come to an agreement. It's what do the facts show about these violent acts. You know, John Lott, Professor John Lott,
of
is
course.
An expert on this, and he talks about how all of these attacks take place in no free gun-free zones. That's a fact.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that's the tiebreaker. It's the facts. What does truth say? And I think it's the case on all the issues. Matt, something that we just touched on, but I just think it's so important. We are hurtling into a culture that cannot talk to each other.
Yeah.
and we could talk about it with the left and the right. We could talk about what happened after President Trump was inaugurated, at the inauguration. All that. It's been really dreadful to see the divide. Even in neighborhoods, people can't talk about presidential candidate. So I guess I feel, and I think you do too, that we need to example being able to talk about those differences, as you expressed, like the never Trumpers and the supporters.
It's about silencing people, shaming them, making them feel like their views are not worth listening
and
to.
And that's a total we don't want any of that in
none
our
of
movement.
It.
Let's fight it out.
That's right.
Duke it out. I always say, if your opinions, if you can't defend your opinions, they're not worth holding.
So I did a couple of interviews today with some, there's some liberal outlets here too, and we welcome them. By the way, they always tell us they get treated with respect, and I do all their shows. And, you know, the question on their minds is, why would you have Wayne LaPierre, you know, speak at CPAC today? And my answer is, because America's hurting. This is a terrible tragedy. Yes, there's a gun component to it, but there's just a violence and a darkness that's creeping in, sadly, into this country and into our society. And we're going to talk about it. If we don't talk about the problems, we will never solve problems. And so for us to shy away from something just because it's raw and emotional and there are people hurting would be a travesty. We've got to step into that and show
exactly
that conservatives care, and we have solutions. We have our own solutions too, and they're uniquely American solutions. America is big enough and broad enough to tackle our problems.
Well, of course, the president exampled last night
he
by
did.
Bringing all these kids into the White House and having a dialogue, and that's what we need to do. So that brings me down to that Never Trumper thing, because you and I both have friends who just have dug their heels in. They cannot stand Donald Trump. Matt, I feel that a lot of it is a pride thing, that they called it wrong.
I agree with you.
And they don't want to be wrong. Yeah.
I don't want to be wrong either. I can really understand it. Especially with my kids, if I tell them something and then I find out it's wrong, I have to go back and say, sweetheart, I was wrong.
Yes.
I had that wrong. I thought you were the one who did that, not the other.
Yeah,
we have
yeah.
five kids, so I'm always confused as to who does what, by
yeah.
the way. But the point is, you're right. It does. Our own pride and ego and hubris mm-hmm. and everything mm-hmm. gets wrapped up into what, especially if you're on TV and I realize after I've said something I was completely wrong. And I've done that, and I feel terrible. I feel shame for that. It's okay. It's the human condition. We're imperfect.
But you
know?
Can't really be effective. Look, I can't relate to pretenders. I've never been one, and that's why I don't play the game very well. But I can't imagine making a passion plea for something that I don't think is true or not,
yeah.
and not confessing, or if I made a mistake. On the air, I get this. People say, you got this wrong. Well, then tell me, for heaven's
that's
sake.
Right.
I don't want to mislead people.
But think about this, Sandy. So the Never Trumpers started at CPAC a couple of years ago because they wanted Donald Trump to be silenced. And they told me that he would pick his sister for the Supreme Court, that he would be pro-choice, that he would not fulfill these
yes.
conservative commitments. So just do this. Just be intellectually honest. He saw him for a year. He picked a total stud for the Supreme Court. He's been there on climate change, pulling out of the Paris Agreement. He's been there on ending this fight against nuns. I mean, how insane was that? He's done issue after issue after issue that we asked him to do at CPAC. He listened to us. He's doing it. If you're a conservative, he's still listening. If you're a conservative and you don't give him credit for these decisions over the last year, you're a fraud.
Yeah, I agree with you. Or you've got too much pride, and your pride is
yeah.
just getting in the way of common sense. Matt, let's talk about this particular conference, because you got a great lineup. You got the president, the vice president, and I think half of his cabinet. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
I have to say, it is so action-packed.
Yeah. No, it is. And one thing that I think is important, that my understanding is you're emphasizing, and I'm all aboard on this, is this Trump's approach to economics, in the
yeah.
sense that this whole business free trade.
Yeah.
Free trade has bastardized. Just bastardized. It has basically enriched a lot of people while it's hurt the country.
They use the term free trade to cover things that are not free trade.
Yeah, that help them personally,
right.
help
That's
their
right.
businesses. And yeah. it's also become a banner of honor to be mm-hmm. a free trader, but it hasn't meant what it should mean. It's kind of like the bastardization of capitalism.
That's right.
Which had become crony. That means it helps your friends.
We call it on the stage today capitalism.
It's like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because you're exactly yeah. right. They use a free market
yeah.
term for things that are not free market. And then now the whole concept of free trade is under attack not because free trade should be under attack, but all this stuff that surrounded it, the crud around it, should be under attack.
So, Matt, of all the hornet's nests you could dip your toe in, that's a big one.
That is a big one.
Because you and I both know that, for instance, the Chamber of Commerce isn't on the same page with you on that.
I know that.
So how's that going down? Because they're the big money people.
They're
the ones funding the leadership of the party.
Yes, that's right.
So how's that going down?
We're going to be what we need to be. We're going to be authentic to our mission. We're going to be accepting of different points of view and trying to encourage people to come our way. But if people feel like we're going to be too strident on questions of, you know, really scrutinizing their ability to bamboozle people by calling these big trade agreements free trade. You look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership. At the end of that process, Japan's economy was still going to be 90% closed to foreign goods and American goods. How is it free? How do American consumer, it's not the American entrepreneur. So it's time to say enough to all of that. And Donald Trump is doing that. So I would say that if you're a conservative who believes in free trade, actually attacking the idea of giving American sovereignty to foreign entities and stopping the insanity of some of these big multilateral agreements, you're going to be on board with what the Trump approach is.
Matt, one last thing. One thing you're doing that I love, you know, I do a lot of international stuff too, just since it's where my heart is, and I found we have a lot of like-minded people.
We do.
Fighting lonely battles
in various
countries.
We need to stand with each other.
And that's what you're doing, right?
We are doing that.
CPAC is actually doing that.
We went to Jerusalem. We had our first international CPAC in Tokyo. We have Ms. Le Pen speaking. We have Nigel Farage speaking. Conservatism is a global movement. We have to be there for each other.
Katie Hopkins is going to be my guest on Friday. I don't think she's going to be on the main stage, but she will be next year, I bet. Once you've heard her,
she is
incredible.
I know she is.
She is incredible. I just can't wait. Well, Matt, it's a great event. And it's so nice to talk to you. You and I could talk for a long time, I'm thinking, and not run out of stuff to talk about.
Well, you do it for a living.
I do. But it's funny because I'm one of those talk show hosts that doesn't really go on by myself. I need people with me.
But well, it's always a pleasure to be with you. We're so happy you're here.
God bless you, Matt, you and
too.
Mercedes, and your family, and keep you strong as we fight this fight together.
It's a big fight. Thank
God
you, Sandy.
You. Okay.
All right, take care.
All right, stay tuned because Gordon Chang, a Chinese expert, will be joining us next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Today, moral relativism and political correctness are assaulting truth. How can the world have hope when believers themselves aren't clear on the authority of the Bible?
The Church of Jesus Christ always faces a tremendous temptation to deviate from the Word of God.
The God who speaks clearly expresses God's intent in giving us His Word, and the response that is demanded of those who hear.
Nobody ever encounters God and says, that was boring and irrelevant. When people say that about the Bible, it just says to me, they've not encountered the God of the Bible.
Our faith is rooted in history, and consequently, we need to use the evidence and never be afraid of it.
The God Who Speaks is a feature-length documentary from the American Family Association, which could bolster your confidence in the Word of God.
Churches really need to see this, really need to understand what the Bible actually is.
Available now at thegodwhospeaks.org.
Looking for a great vacation for you and your family spring break? Well, so are we. And I think we've got the place for you. Southeast Houston suffered unbelievable damage because of Hurricane Harvey. Hundreds of thousands of families have had their homes gutted because of the flooding they endured last year in September. Now you and I get a chance to be the hands and feet of Jesus. March 10th to March 24th, 8 Days of Hope is going to do its first ever back-to-back trip. 8 Days of Hope, 14 and 15. It's free. All you have to do is get to Houston. We provide the food and lodging. We're looking for skilled professionals, people who know how to work with their hands. Maybe they do this for a living. We're also looking for people that are less skilled but are still looking to be a part of something way bigger than just themselves. You don't have to come for all 2 weeks. You can come for as little as 3 days. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information. 8daysofhope.com. Come be a part of something huge. 8 Days of Hope 14 and 15. Be the hands and feet of Jesus in Southeast Houston. 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. As a young boy, Billy Graham dreamed of becoming a baseball player, but all that changed at a revival meeting in 1934 when the lanky 15-year-old walked the aisle and accepted Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. Ironically, he would make a name for himself inside baseball stadiums not by winning games, but by winning souls, sharing the gospel message in 185 countries. The North Carolina farm boy went on to counsel kings and queens, presidents and prime ministers, but in his heart, Billy Graham was always a simple preacher with a life-changing message, a message that transcended politics and religion and race, a simple message: God loves you, and he wants to have a relationship with you. America's pastor died today at his mountaintop home in Montreat, North Carolina. He was 99. Billy Graham, a good and faithful servant. Well done. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios coming to you live. Can you hear all those people, the buzz? It's we're on Radio Row, and of course, let's see, who am I surrounded by? Let's see, I see Mike Gallagher. I see NRA TV. Tom Fitton's Judicial Watch is around there, Sirius XM. I'm not sure. Who's on the other side of me, Gordon? I can't even see.
You know, this Radio Row is so long, I have not been able to get to the end of it.
Well, it's a mystery to both of us then, but most of the media in the country are present here in one form or another. NPR, I think, actually is next to us now that I said that. I've got a banner in the way so I can't see it, but they come because the conservative movement converges at this conference, CPAC 2018, every year. This year, the president, the vice president, half of his cabinet, national security experts, including my guest, who I'll introduce properly in a second, converge upon here to talk about the issues of the day. And it's going to be guns. It's going to be the courts. It's going to be the scandal. It will be all of it. And so it's my privilege to be here on Radio Row and to be able to interact in person with so many of the warriors in this battle. Sandy Rios, back with you, by the way, in case I forgot to say that part. My guest is not new to you, but it's been a while since we talked to him. Gordon Chang is, you can tell by his last name, he knows a lot about China. Gordon is a columnist. He's an expert on China. He's the author of The Coming Collapse of China, also Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and he has a new article out today. What's the outlet for this article today?
Well, I have an article in Fox News Opinion a couple days ago about the SEC turning down, not giving approval to a Chinese-led investment group that wanted to take over the Chicago Stock Exchange. And I'm really glad that the SEC decided this way, because we cannot allow Beijing into our financial backbone.
This is a complicated thing. Any kind of dealing with China, to me, is always complicated and also hard to understand for the Western mind, because we actually think differently. The Chinese mind and the Western mind have different ways of looking at things, and the system's different.
Well, the system can't be even more different, because the Chinese are moving away from authoritarianism to full-on totalitarianism under Xi Jinping, basically going back to something that would be familiar to the China of the 1950s under Mao Zedong. China is moving in all the wrong directions, and it's becoming a threat not just to its neighbors, but also to us and to the entire international community, because China wants to overthrow the world's rules-based system. And so we have, I think, an existential challenge, and this is something that is going to be discussed today at CPAC and tomorrow as well, because China now confronts us.
You know, it's interesting for you to say that, Gordon, because the years that I've followed China. In so, like I said, there's so many things I don't need to explain to you to talk about when you discuss China. But when you watch the military and the political leaders and then the people, as in most countries, it's always different. But I remember Bill Gertz reporting about the military buildup years ago, the dangerous buildup and the kind of plans to overtake the West. And at the time, though, it just didn't seem possible. But now it seems like it's actually within the realm of possibility. Would you agree because of the military buildup?
Well, certainly. What's happened is, you know, for four decades, you know, you go back to Nixon, the United States, our policy was to integrate China into the international system so that it would become like us, as we talked about. And that was a very generous vision. You know, we needed the Chinese during the Cold War to beat the Soviets. But afterwards, our interests diverged. But nonetheless, we tried to help China. And in many ways, and I think this is wrong, we bolstered the rule of the Communist Party, and we saw it in America's interest to do that. Well, that was always wrong. And now we're seeing the results of that as China is challenging us and is destabilizing its neighbors. So we really have no choice but to confront them. They've been in a war with us. We haven't been in a war with them. We've been oblivious. We have decided that we were not going to see what was going on in China. And all of a sudden, we're now starting to realize the results of that policy. And unfortunately, we have now got a fight on our hands, the fight of this generation.
Yeah, and I think the root of a lot of that would be this whole move, and I just talked with Matt Schlapp about this, this whole move to free trade, as though it were some holy grail, this whole notion of free trade. A lot of our companies and corporations found such a huge new market in China that they, I think, willingly blinded themselves to the dangers they were putting the country in. So we have enriched China by our own wealth. We've built the economy up, and then they've taken the money and built military weaponry and stolen technology so that we've allowed them to sort of outplay us. I think we did it with one eye closed.
Well, or with both eyes closed.
With both eyes closed.
Well, what China is doing right now, it is closing off its markets to foreign companies, and it's doing that in a number of ways. So, for instance, there have been discriminatory law enforcement actions. There have been subsidies to state enterprises, which are now increasing. It's state industrial policy on steroids, this Made in China 2025 initiative, where China has identified 10 critical sectors that it wants to be dominated by the Chinese, doesn't want foreigners in them. So, for instance, aircraft, semiconductors, electric vehicles, all the rest of it. But also, we're seeing a closing of the Chinese mind where, you know, under Deng Xiaoping, who was Mao Zedong's successor, he opened up China. Well, right now, China is closing down, and we're going back to a system which doesn't allow foreigners to really do anything except surrender their technology. So this has been something where, you know, our companies have started to complain, but it really is too late in a sense. And I think that we're going to find that our economic relations with China are going to be much more contentious than they have been in the past. And in a way, it's important for us to defend ourselves and our workers. We haven't been doing that.
So, Gordon, what is the end game? I mean, how can China be part of an international market and trading system if they continue to shut off? I don't know how you maintain that old-style communism where your people really are shut off and you control them if you don't shut off economically. So is the game to become completely interdependent and to not need the world's goods?
Basically that they do believe that there should only be Chinese competitors. And that is important for them because the Communist Party has sort of based its legitimacy on the continual delivery of prosperity. Now it's having a hard time doing that because it's not growing at the 6.9% pace that they claimed last year. It's probably growing 2 or 3% last year. The year before that, growing 1 or 2. And the Communist Party has a real problem now. And so what they're doing is they're looking to nationalism as a way of bolstering the position of the Communist Party. Well, nationalism translates into expansionism, to belligerence, to provocation. And so we now have a China which is moving in all the wrong directions. It's basically a Cold War existential challenge to America. The Chinese want to not only rule the world, I can sort of understand that, In terms of competition. But what they want to do is they want to overturn the world's rules-based order and replace it with their Chinese system. And under the Chinese system, which is the imperial system, there was only one legitimate ruler of all people under heaven, and that was the Chinese emperor. And everybody else was supposed to pay tribute to them. There are hints when what Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, is saying, that they want to go back to that system. Now, this sounds ludicrous, but this just shows the nature of Chinese ambition right now, that they have really got to the point where they think that they can lord it over everybody in ways which is just completely incompatible.
Of course, it's happened before, hasn't it? And it doesn't end well. I don't mean with China, just China. I mean, this is what happens in the world when people fancy that they can conquer the world. And it's an inevitable collision with somebody, whoever the opposing force is. You know, this whole business of President Trump working with the Chinese to try to calm the North Koreans down, Kim Jong-un, I really love to know what you think happened there. And I do have one word about it I'd like to... Well, I'll just say, I know someone in the coal mining industry who has told me recently that in this embargo over North Korea's coal, that there's this big game being played, that China is actually taking the coal and getting it to Iran in underhanded ways while pretending to be cooperating with this ban on the coal. So they're not actually helping us.
No, they're not. No, we're every president comes into office wanting to cooperate with China, and President Trump was no exception to that. But we know that the Chinese in recent days and recent months have been violating UN sanctions. And these are sanctions on trade in and out of North Korea. The Chinese have been through various ways facilitating that trade. And it's really now up to President Trump to impose costs on Beijing for doing so. It's blatant. You know, there is a President Trump's tweet, the famous one about the Chinese being caught red-handed violating the sanctions. Well, now it's up for us to make the Chinese pay for that, because if we don't do that, we know what's going to happen. It's what's happening today. They're continuing to violate these sanctions. So right now, it's not so much a question of Chinese villainy. Yes, the Chinese are villains, but it's a question of America's unwillingness to deal with that. And this is something we have seen in previous administrations. We saw it in the Bush administration, we saw it in the Obama administration, and it's now up to President Trump to change that very dangerous pattern.
Is it possible, Gordon, for us to contain this now? I mean, it's very hard for me to gauge where we are in terms of our military strength. I know that so much, starting with the Clintons, our technology started flowing into China. Much of it given, some of it stolen.
A lot of it stolen.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So the weaponry's been mimicked. I mean, do we have capacity now, if we have the will, to actually contain China?
Oh, we absolutely have the ability to do that, Sandy. So, for instance, look, we are the trade deficit country. Last year, our trade deficit with China is somewhere in the $300 billion range, $375 billion for merchandise trade surplus. And trade deficit countries don't worry about trade friction. We can push them around. Also, we've got a much bigger economy than theirs. You know, for the last year for which we have numbers, you know, our economy is like $18, $19 trillion. In 2016, it was $18.6 trillion. That year, China's economy was $10.8 trillion. Bigger economies can push smaller economies around. Also, we have a stable economy. Theirs is fragile. It's heading toward a debt crisis. And by the way, we do not have an economy that is geared to selling things to China, but China has an economy geared to selling things to us. Last year, China's 88.8% of its merchandise trade surplus was related to sales to the United States. That gives us overwhelming leverage. The only thing that we lack, Sandy, is political will to use that leverage. And we need to do that, because we got to protect ourselves, and we got to protect our children, grandchildren, and everyone around the world who shares our ideals.
You know, I also, the last thing, the Chinese people have had a measure of a taste of freedom. They've had a taste of freedom in terms of free economies. They've also had a taste of freedom in terms of exercising their faith. You know, when we went back into China, we found out that there were millions of Chinese in underground churches, and they've been able to practice at least somewhat freely. But now I'm hearing terrible stories of sort of a a reversal of the ability to reversal. So tell me what's happening inside China to the Chinese people in the midst of this clamp down and this return to the old ways.
Well, you know, in the religious area, the fastest growing religion in China, and probably there's nowhere else on earth where Christianity is growing faster, and that is in China, especially the underground Protestant churches, which have just been beyond the control of China. You know, we go to church for an hour on Sunday. You know, the Chinese in China, if they start at, you know, early in the morning and they stop at 5, they still feel that they have not had enough of their service. It is just so different. There is a fervor there which the Communist Party can't match. Now, the party right now, through regulations, is trying to control the underground churches. The Vatican is going to end up with this disgusting deal with Beijing on the appointment of bishops. But it doesn't really matter. You know, I think Catholicism in China is fast growing, but it's going to suffer. And the beneficiary of it are going to be the underground Protestant churches, because they will not be tamed by the Chinese communist officials.
I agree with you, Gordon. I can't tell you how many hours I've spent with them. Incredible people willing to give their lives, you know. They're just ready.
Yes.
And so this is going to be fascinating. I don't know how you lock down that many million people with that kind of passion.
They can't do it in China. They can certainly persecute Christians. They've been doing that. They've been destroying mega churches. They've been taking crosses off churches. But nonetheless, this is a battle they cannot win.
All right, last thing, your panel today, what besides what we've talked about, what are you guys focusing on?
Well, today it's storm clouds over China. John Batchelor, the radio host, is going to broadcast his show from CPAC. Tomorrow we have another China panel that I'm emceeing with John Bolton, Steve Moore, and Frank Gaffney. And then after that, Friday evening, I'm moderating a panel on conservatism in the Indo-Pacific region.
All right, so good stuff. Gordon, you're a national treasure.
Oh,
and,
thank you, Sandy.
Listen, I appreciate having some of your time. So God bless you and your wife and your work, and we'll keep reading what you write because you help to inform us about what's going on in China. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios, stay tuned because the next guest is going to be a former federal prosecutor, and she has a lot to say about the corruption in our courts that's happening right now. So don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Anthony Sabato Jr., a model and actor, didn't speak English when he came to America from Italy at 12 years old with his parents. In an appearance on The View, he was belittled as a so-called self-described immigrant because he supported President Trump's border wall. Sabato Jr. said he was a proud American who migrated to America legally and argued that all Americans should be concerned about illegal immigration and border security, distinguishing legal migrants from illegal immigrants. Some don't like that view.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
Some 2,000 years ago, the followers of the crucified Christ learned that he had risen from the grave. They quickly spread the word that Jesus was alive.
Jesus lives!
It's good news that spread from one generation to the next, and now it's our turn. One way to tell this extraordinary news to others is by simply wearing and sharing our colorful He Lives Easter buttons. Get your pack of 10 today at afastore.net.
Preborn is saving babies' lives.
My name is Omaris, and I was 19 when I found out I was pregnant. I felt that if I brought a child to this planet, that I could not take care of it, and I could not be mentally prepared to handle everything that comes with having a child. So I thought my best option was to have an abortion. And once I came to have my ultrasound and I heard his heartbeat, I could not have an abortion.
The Ministry of Preborn saves babies' lives through ultrasounds. When a mother hears her baby's heartbeat on an ultrasound, she'll choose life 80% of the time. To donate and provide for a free ultrasound to help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you live at CPAC 2018 National Harbor, Maryland. This is a beautiful hotel. It's a perfect venue for this big conference. And those of you that are watchers of Fox and all the networks, you're going to be seeing pieces of this. I'm sure a lot of news will come out of things that are said at this conference during the next 3 days. And so on Radio Row, it's my privilege to speak with people in the flesh that I sometimes don't get to see. And the next guest, I know her through through email and the things that she's written, but I've never met her before. Her name is Sydney Powell. And Sydney, for a long time, I thought you were a guy, for one thing.
That happens a lot.
But let me just say, Sydney is a senior policy advisor for America First Policies. She's a former federal prosecutor. She's the author of the book Licensed to Lie. She's a senior policy advisor with America First and was an assistant United States attorney in 3 judicial districts under 9 United States attorneys from both political parties. She represented the U.S. in 350 criminal appeals, and we could go on and on with that, but she's had a lot of experience and has a lot of opinions and concerns about what's going on in the courts, and certainly with what's unfolding in these scandals, not scandals on President Trump, but scandals in our intelligence agencies and in our judiciary and the function of them toward this president. Sydney, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sandy. It's so fun to be here in person at CPAC and sitting across the desk from you.
It is fun, isn't it? It makes
yes,
a big difference.
It does.
Yeah, so I'm just curious, just to set the stage here, when you were prosecuting cases, what case comes to your mind that was one of the most satisfying things you ever oversaw?
Oh, I helped with the continuing criminal enterprise prosecution of a major drug dealer who had put a contract out on and killed a federal judge. Yes. And we got one of the first continuing criminal enterprise convictions in the country against him.
You know, one of the distresses for many of us is that the Justice Department has been so slow to get a lot of their U.S. attorneys in place. How important is that? How important is the U.S. attorney?
That's huge. I mean, the U.S. attorney runs the prosecutions for the federal districts, and there are 93 of them, I think, across the country. Only a fraction of them have been filled. And the Senate's also stalling on major high-up appointments in the Department of Justice that require Senate confirmation. So there are only a few people that can even make the decisions or sign the documents that are needed for some of our most important security issues.
It's really disgraceful. And also has to be said that, you know, the Republicans will say, some, the leadership will say it's the Democrats' fault, but it isn't necessarily. Like in the case of the judicial, the Justice Department holdups, Cory Gardner, the senator from Colorado, is holding them up because
exactly.
He wants he doesn't like what Jeff Sessions has done about marijuana law in Colorado. So it's disgraceful, really.
Yes, that's a ridiculous reason to hold up appointments for law enforcement around the country. It's absolutely outrageous.
Well,
And there's still a lot of vacancies even waiting to be have people nominated for them.
It's just, yeah.
I mean, every U.S. attorney in the country should have resigned the instant that President Trump was sworn in. That's mandatory, and I'm not even sure that happened or they let some of them stay. I mean, we need a wholesale clean out of the Department of Justice and to start over.
Yeah. Do you know if that's underway? Some effort? Surely there's enough noise being made about that that somebody's doing something.
I think there's some progress on that front, but not nearly enough.
All right. When we think of courts now, we think of the dreadful things. Our courts have been a mess for a long time. But I want to mention just two decisions that are really noteworthy to all of us. And that's those decisions by these lower court judges to stop the President of the United States from his rulings in immigration. We'll start with that. And then, of course, on the transgenders in the military, which is coming down. There are developments on that even today as we speak. We'll get to that. But how can this be, Sydney? How can a lower court judge, for instance, stop a president who really has authority over these immigration issues? How can that be, and how can that be allowed to stand?
It probably won't stand ultimately, but I really think the argument should have been made and made much more strongly that the courts don't even have jurisdiction over those orders, that they're solely within the executive branch as long as he stays within the confines of the particular statute. And I think he did. But when I listened to the oral argument of the first immigration argument in the, I think it was somewhere in the Ninth Circuit, the young man who argued it for the government was just appallingly bad. I mean, there are any number of people that could have walked in, argued it with no preparation, and done a better job than he did.
Yeah, it's funny because I heard...
And he was one of the Obama holdovers, of course.
I heard a bit of a briefing about that yesterday, about how a lot of these cases are not being won because the hearts of the arguers are not in the cases. They're on the other side. They don't care about it. Terrible arguments presented. So it's a combination of things.
It is.
But you think? Are you saying you think that the Obama, the Trump administration could have ignored that order because they didn't have jurisdiction?
Well, that raises a political firestorm.
Right.
So it's a very difficult line to walk. And without having been, you know, intimately involved in the research and presentation of the cases, I really shouldn't Monday morning quarterback it.
All right, so let's move to the transgender ruling. The president issued, it came out in a tweet, but then they developed a policy that transgenders would not be able to serve in the military. And then right away we had these lower court judges saying, oh, you can't do that, you can't stop it. And, of course, transgenders as of the first of this year were allowed then in by ignoring the commander-in-chief because of a lower court judge, they went ahead and started signing up. So that to me, Sydney, that's like more than just a disagreement over that issue. He is the commander-in-chief.
Yes.
Could you not see a judge hearing putting a stay on some soldier coming to him? I don't want to fight that fight. I don't want to go into that battle.
I don't feel like it today.
I don't feel like it today. So, you know, how cruel it is to send me in when I... Can't a judge do that if that's the precedent?
It's unbelievable. I mean, I can't fathom that ruling at all. And there are so many issues that the military has to deal with on the front lines. We just don't. They need the absolute right to decide who can join the military and who can't.
Well, and the commander-in-chief must retain that authority. I think many of us were stunned that there was no appeal. As far as I know, no appeal to that decision.
Oh, I don't. I don't even know that.
Well, I wouldn't say that for a fact.
Surely the government would have.
What I've been told is that they can't unless they are instructed to do that. I don't think it's happened, Sydney.
Wow.
So
that's stunning. I mean, one of the things the Obama administration did very well was use the courts to make law. And that's not what a court is supposed to do. Courts are supposed to interpret the laws that are passed by Congress. But the Obama administration was very creative in bringing all different kinds of cases, criminal cases and civil cases, to make law, to take over local police departments, to do all kinds of things, to use the banks to shut down lawful operations of gun dealers and ammunition sellers and pawn shops and pharmaceuticals even. I mean, they had a list of 30 things, and they called it Operation Choke Point. And they used the banks to, they extorted the banks basically to put pressure on those businesses and shut off their banking access to close them off. I mean, that's a mafia extortion tactic that was put into our Department of Justice. And, you know, people are still there that believe those things are the right policies.
And there were enough judges that were willing to do that. That's
exactly
what's amazing. But didn't Barack Obama manage to appoint like a record number of, I don't know what the category, be federal judges or lower court judges, I don't know what the designation, but I think he set records in the number of judges he put in place. And so we're reaping the benefits of that, if you want to.
Definitely.
Okay, let's move to something that's concerning, disturbing to you and to me and to so many of us. And that is, let's go to the FISA court, that mysterious court that meets in D.C., and let's go to the case of, we could start with the FISA court in general. Just how in the world does a court with that high of a reputation, that much responsibility, revered really, even though we didn't know who their names were, how could they have appointed, how could they have approved a warrant on such flimsy evidence to surveil a candidate and then a sitting president of the United States and the people that surround him? How could that be, Sidney?
They must have simply relied on the word of the Department of Justice officials and the FBI officials who presented the warrant, which obviously they cannot and should not have done just blindly. If you read the Steele dossier, you can see it is the biggest bunch of hooey. I mean, anybody reading it goes, so what? It's remarkable in how bad it is, not in terms of incriminating content, but in nothing being there of any substance, and just so-and-so, I mean, it's
like a National Enquirer article. I remember
it's worse than that. I've seen better documented National Enquirer articles.
I remember reading it when it first came out months ago, and what was it, a year ago? I don't know. And I remember laughing to myself before I heard any commentary. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
This can't possibly, this is ridiculous. This is like, you know, man impregnates 9 choir members. You know, it's kind of one of those headlines.
Right.
In the National Enquirer. And how could anybody, don't we fancy that FBI agents and judges in the FISA court are as smart as we are? Don't we kind of think so?
Well, we used to think that. Now we have to think that some of them are simply malevolent and agenda-driven, and we've got to scrutinize it all far more. There are heads that need to roll in the FBI and people that need to be prosecuted. I mean, they committed fraud on the court. They committed obstruction of justice. They conspired to do all this. There are several federal statutes that apply to their conduct. And there's a FISA court ruling that most people aren't aware of that came out about a year ago and was unsealed, in which the FISA court chastises the FBI severely and notes serious Fourth Amendment violations in their conduct because they were giving raw FISA access to private contractors. And I think the name that's going to come out there is Fusion GPS.
Wow. Sidney, hear the music. We are out of time.
Oh, my gosh.
You just wrote... No, that's the way it goes. You wrote an article on General Flynn. On the Daily Caller. And I wish we... I wanted to talk about that, but we're going to have to just put that article on our Facebook page so people can read it.
And follow me on Twitter at Sidney Powell, the number one, and you can find all my articles. They're in my Twitter feed.
And they are great. Sidney has great insight. She's a national treasure on the legal system. All right, so we're in this fight together, Sidney, and it's wonderful to meet you in person.
Thanks. Nice to meet you,
all right,
too.
All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning, stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.